found to be the manicomio, the insane asylum. Shortly before the dream, I had heard that a co-religionist had been forced to resign a position at a state asylum, which he had secured with great effort. Our interest is aroused by the speech, Aufgeseres, where we might expect, from the situation maintained throughout the dream, Auf Wiedersehen, au revoir, and by its quite meaningless opposite, Auf Ungeseres. According to information I have received from Hebrew scholars, Geseres is a genuine Hebrew word derived from the verb goyser, and may best be rendered by ordained sufferings, fated disaster. From its use in the Jewish jargon, one might think it signified wailing and lamentation. Ungeseres is a coinage of my own and first attracts my attention, but for the present it baffles me. The little observation at the end of the dream that Ungeseres indicates an advantage over Geseres opens the way to the associations and to an explanation. The same relation holds good with caviar. The unsalted kind is more highly prized than the salted. Caviar to the general noble passions, herein lies concealed a joking allusion to a member of my household, of whom I hope, for she is younger than I, that she will watch over the future of my children. This, too, agrees with the fact that another member of my household, our worthy nurse, is clearly indicated in the nurse or nun of the dream. But a connecting link is wanting between the pair, salted and unsalted, and Geseres Ungeseres. This is to be found in soured and unsoured. In their flight or exodus out of Egypt, the children of Israel did not have time to allow their bread to be leavened, and in memory of the event to this day they eat unsoured bread at Easter time. Here I can also find room for the sudden notion which came to me in this part of the analysis. I remembered how we promenaded about the city of Breslau, which was strange to us, at the end of the Easter holidays, my friend from Berlin and I. A little girl asked me to tell her the way to a certain street. I had to tell her I did not know it, whereupon I remarked to my friend, "I hope that later on in life the little one will show more perspicacity in selecting the persons by whom she allows herself to be guided." Shortly afterwards a sign caught my eye. "Dr. Herod. Office hours." I said to myself, "I hope this colleague does not happen to be a children's specialist." Meanwhile, my friend had been developing his views on the biological significance of bilateral symmetry, and had begun a sentence as follows. "If we had but one eye in the middle of our foreheads, like Cyclops..." This leads us to the speech of the professor in the preliminary dream. "My son, the myopic." And now I have been led to the chief source for Geseres. Many years ago, when this son of Professor M, who is today an independent thinker, was still sitting on his school bench, he contracted a disease of the eye, which the doctor declared gave cause for anxiety. He was of the opinion that as long as it remained in one eye, it would not matter. If, however, it should extend to the other eye, it would be serious. The disease healed in the one eye without leaving any bad effects. Shortly afterwards, however, its symptoms actually appeared in the other eye. The terrified mother of the boy immediately summoned the physician to the seclusion of her country resort, but he took another view of the matter. "What sort of Geseres is this you are making?" he said to his mother with impatience. "If one side got well, the other side will get well too." And so it turned out. And now as to the connection between this and myself and those dear to me. The school bench upon which the son of Professor M learned his first lessons has become the property of my eldest son. It was given to his mother, into whose lips I put the words of parting in the dream. One of the wishes that can be attached to this transference may now easily be guessed. This school bench is intended by its construction to guard the child from becoming short-sighted and one-sided. Hence myopia, and behind the Cyclops, and the discussion about bilateralism. The concern about one-sidedness is of twofold signification. Along with the bodily one-sidedness, that of intellectual development may be referred to. Does it not seem as though the scene in the dream, with all its madness, were putting its negative on just this anxiety? After the child had said his word of parting on the one side, he calls out its opposite on the other side, as though in order to establish an equilibrium. He is acting, as it were, in obedience to bilateral symmetry. Thus, the dream frequently has the profoundest meaning in places where it seems most absurd. In all ages, those who had something to say and were unable to say it without danger to themselves gladly put on the cap and bells. The listener for whom the forbidden saying was intended was more likely to tolerate it if he was able to laugh at it, and to flatter himself with the comment that what he disliked was obviously something absurd. The dream proceeds in reality just as the prince does in the play Who Must Counterfeit the Fool, and hence the same thing may be said of the dream which Hamlet says of himself, substituting an unintelligible witticism for the real conditions. I am but mad north-north-west. When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a handsaw. Thus my solution of the problem of the absurdity of dreams is that the dream thoughts are never absurd, at least not those belonging to the dreams of sane persons, and that the dream activity produces absurd dreams and dreams with individual absurd elements if criticism, ridicule, and derision in the dream thoughts are to be represented by it in its manner of expression. My next concern is to show that the dream activity is primarily brought about by the cooperation of the three factors which have been mentioned, and of a fourth one which remains to be cited, that it accomplishes nothing short of a transposition of the dream thoughts, observing the three conditions which are prescribed for it, and that the question whether the mind operates in the dream with all its faculties, or only with a portion of them, is deprived of its cogency and is inapplicable to the actual circumstances. But since there are plenty of dreams in which judgments are passed, criticisms made, and facts recognized, in which astonishment at some single element of the dream appears, and arguments and explanations are attempted, I must meet the objections which may be inferred from these occurrences by the citation of selected examples. My answer is as follows. Everything in the dream which occurs as an apparent exercise of the critical faculty is to be regarded not as an intellectual accomplishment of the dream activity, but as belonging to the material of the dream thoughts, and it has found its way from them as a finished structure to the manifest dream content. I may go even further than this.